Baseball is back.
I want to see some real games.
The season is going to be different.
They've been given a gift with this 60-game schedule.
On the field, in the socially distant clubhouse, in the empty stands, there's a lot to talk about.
There's a stunning development.
And this is the place to do
it. Tony, you know, he talks, I listen.
This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass.
Brought to you by Big Y, Rodenheiser Home Services, Woodbridge Wine, Gravely, and Jackson Lumber.
On Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, welcome into the Baseball Reporters Day 2. Again, I am broadcasting to you from my home here. Jim Murray is in our studio in Dorchester. And I said earlier on the Felger and Maz program that there was a story in the Globe today by Michael Silverman in which the headline read, "High-speed cameras, better tracking, and an in-game contest are all part of the new MLB broadcast experience." High-speed cameras, better tracking, and in-game contests, all part of the new MLB broadcast experience. And when I read that story, it really highlighted to me all the major problems with baseball, which is the game's totally geeked out. The game is completely geeked out. But I don't want to start there. I spent a lot of time on it this afternoon. I am going to get back to that because it does relate to the other story in the Globe today that caught my attention. And that was the story by Alex Speer of the Globe. And the headline on this one is, in a compressed baseball season, every little thing becomes magnified. So let me just mention this quickly. Jim Murray, in a 60-game schedule, do you know what every game is worth?
What do you mean?
Like, relative to what? In other words, comparatively speaking, every game is worth 2.7 times what it is during a regular season. So basically, every game now is a 3-game series. That's the way you got to think of it, okay? And both of these stories are connected that I cited in the Globe, and here is why. When I read the story by Alex Speer in the Globe today, I came across this quote. And Speer spoke with Zach Scott, who oversees the Red Sox analytics department, okay? And Zach Scott, I think, was hired under Dave Dombrowski. Okay, so again, Scott is an analyst. He's a numbers guy. He's a numbers cruncher. And here is the quote that he gave Alex Speer in today's Globe. "I'm in the business of working with a group that tries to project performance. Well, good luck this year trying to project performance very, very accurately," said Scott. "I'm so used to a certain mindset from working in this game. Often, I would just tell people in the office, we're better off not paying attention until June. We can only make dumb judgments if we start reacting before the first couple of months are through." You know what my answer to that is? Good. Good. This is the whole point. This is why I like the 60-game schedule. This is why you should like it. All these people that say, well, it's not the way you should play the game. That's the whole point. The way the game is played doesn't work anymore. Over 162 with this mindset of we're going to grind it out. We're going to take it pitch by pitch. We're going to play it slowly. That whole thing, that doesn't work anymore. The game's boring. The analysts have destroyed the game. So when I read Alex Speer's story and I hear Zach Scott saying, "I'm in the business of working with a group that tries to project performance." Well, good luck this year trying to project performance very accurately. To which I say, excellent. That's exactly what I want. I don't want you to project performance. I want to see it play out. I like the unknown. That's the whole point. That's where the beauty is in it. The unknown of it. If you're going to project performance and be right all the time, that kind of ruins it. I want the uncertainty of it. And to me, this is the problem with baseball, is that it's now run by the analysts. So if a guy like Zach Scott, with all due respect to Zach Scott, and I'm not dumping on him, okay, because every team has one. But the whole idea of we're going to measure it out over the long haul, we're going to play the odds, what fun is that? The way they play the game on the field, swinging from their ass, walk, strikeouts, home runs, the game blows. The quality of the product stinks. The analytics work. They do. They work, which is why I'm glad the 60-game schedule's in place. Because the 60-game schedule neutralizes the analytics. Zach Scott, an analyst, the analyst for the Red Sox, is telling you point blank, it doesn't work. In 60-game sample, it doesn't work. For example, what if I would tell you, Murray, in 2015, the Red Sox finished in last place. Okay, dead last. You know what their record was in their best 60-game stretch? 35-25. So even in a last-place season, they won 35 games over a 60-game season, and that is probably good enough to get them into the playoffs now.
And that team sucked.
Okay, so again, they finished last. Now, they played better at the end of the year, but nonetheless, the point is, if you hit the right 60-game stretch, you can win. 2012, with Bobby Valentine as manager, they finished last. You know what their best 60-game stretch was? 35-25, same as it was in the other last-place season of 2015. And this chart is in Alex Speer's story in the Globe. The point is this. If you're one of these people that sits there and says, I don't like the season, it's not 162, baseball's meant to be played over 162. And again, I saw a similar comment in Speer's story from Jerry Remy. Jerry Remy says, it's so different than what baseball should be. Baseball wasn't built for this kind of season. To which I say, good. Good. Now, look, Jerry's a baseball lifer who has forgotten more about the game than I'll ever know. Okay? So I recognize that Jerry's used to the game being played a certain way. But part of the reason I like this 60-game schedule is because the analysts can't run it over, and it's going to require everybody to act differently. Again, every game is basically the equivalent of a 3-game series. Is every manager going to manage it the same way? Can you really look at it and say, we're going to give away the Sunday game, we're going to play all the backups because we got to rest our starters for the long haul? You can't do it that way anymore. You got to win everyone. You got to win everyone. So I want to start there. And again, 617-779-0985. You tell me, do you like the 60-game schedule? Because I hear from a lot of the traditionalists, who again, to me, are part of the problem, that they don't like the 60-game schedule. And I would tell you, you should. You should like the 60-game schedule. The 60-game schedule introduces a whole range of uncertainty as it pertains to this season. Completely changes everything, which is what makes this season interesting. Now, look, it's not typical. You're not going to get the standard 162. It's going to be unusual. Obviously, we're all leading different lives. But the baseball season, oh, the 60 games is a good thing, not a bad thing. Because, again, I'll go back to the Silverman story in today's Globe as well. Okay, that headline. Let me read to you some of the stuff from the Silverman story. And you tell me, is this what you really think baseball should be? Silverman writes, television broadcasts will feature StatCast 3D, which can generate high-resolution data-based visuals that go beyond recent well-received innovations such as ball and player tracking. For example, curiosity about whether a fly ball to deep right field at Fenway Park would be a home run at Yankee Stadium can be satisfied by overlaying the Yankee Stadium footprint on top of Fenway. Nothing too radical there. Silverman continues, cameras can, in essence, become virtual, offering a recreation of a sharply hit ground ball from the perspective of the third baseman fielding it, the ball, or plenty more. Do you really need to see a ground ball from the perspective of the ball? Does anyone really care about that? Since when do we need to see that? Like, ooh, whoop-de-doo, they can show me a 3D view. How about this one? Players are allowed iPads in the dugout. MLB is going to give every team 15 iPads, MLB issued, that have no internet connectivity, that are preloaded with info on the game's starting pitcher, a batter's previous encounters with a pitcher, advanced scouting reports, spray charts. So after the whole Astros-Red Sox thing, MLB's actually putting more technology in the dugout. And I know there's no internet connectivity. But you know what? I don't think the game should be played that way. I think the whole challenge of the game and in playing baseball is to go up there for an at-bat against a pitcher, then go back to the dugout after he gets you out and have him, and then have you say to yourself, well, the next time I come up, he got me out fastball curve and was ahead in the count, so I'm going to approach it differently. To me, that's the whole challenge, doing it from memory. Once you start introducing video, oh, he's standing on this part of the mound. Oh, he's standing on that part of the mound. That kind of takes the fun out of it. Now you're not using your mind. You're not using your eyes. You're using technology to win. Or how about this paragraph from Silverman? To track the rich, almost unending supply of granular data that's generated in a baseball game, MLB is moving from StatCast 1.0 to StatCast 2.0. Now, I will tell you, baseball does not need a software upgrade. That's not the problem. Silverman goes on. Instead of Doppler-based tracking of pitch velocity, exit velocity, launch angle, spin rate, and defensive tracking of players, the new Hawkeye version in each ballpark employs a 12-camera array. Five of those cameras will track pitches. Seven are trained on players, each operating at 100 frames per second. The system will enable the use of some biomechanical imaging and skeletal models that can help pitchers with delivery issues or batters with swing path quandaries. So again, here's what the game is giving you. More technology, swing path quandaries, biomechanical imaging, StatCast 2.0. Meanwhile, fewer balls in play, less action on the field, more walks, more strikeouts, less action. So really, I'm supposed to get excited about all this? Or does baseball put all this stuff in play because the game blows? The quality of the product blows. The way the game is played now sucks. Which brings me to Jeff Fry. Murray, do you remember who Jeff Fry is?
Vaguely, yes.
Okay. Jimmy Stewart, you know who Jeff Fry is?
I do.
Okay, why don't you tell people who he is?
He was a second baseman for the Red Sox mid-90s?
Okay, late 90s, but close enough, it doesn't matter. The point is this, Jeff Fry was a real Major League second baseman. And when I say a real Major League second baseman, Fry did not have a lot of power. He was really good around the bag. He could hit for average. He was so skilled with the bat on hit and runs that Kevin Kennedy gave him the right to call the hit and run on his own. Okay, Fry would go into the batter's box, and he would grab his wristband when he wanted the guy on first to run because he felt like he had a favorable count and could hit and run with the guy on base. Okay, you never see that anymore. That just doesn't happen. So Fry now, and I want you to listen to this. Fry has revolted against the way the game is played, and more importantly, the way the game is taught to young people in particular. Fry hates launch angle. He hates all the modern metrics. He hates all that stuff. To the point where he started a movement that he calls, quote unquote, she gone hitting. Okay, she gone as in like when you hit a home run, it's gone. He's put videos up on his Twitter account. If you haven't seen them, you should find them. But we're going to play one for you here. We'll play another one when we come back. One of the tweets that Fry put up recently criticized a hitting clinic for constructing a tee that was allegedly built to help players learn how to foul off balls when they were surprised by a pitch on 2-0 deep in the count. Okay, I want you to listen to this video. Jimmy will take it right into break, and when we come back, we'll have Jeff Fry in the program. Here it is.
Now, for today's video, I saw a really cool video the other day. I won't say who posted it, but I think you guys know who it is. But it's the emergency swing deep tee two strike drill, where all you're trying to do is foul a ball off to stay alive. In theory, it's a good idea, but I'm not sure you really need to practice. You may have to do this swing five times your whole life. Okay, and really, the only reason you would be in this position is because you're looking for something other than a fastball. It's the, you know, maybe you're guessing curveball with two strikes or change up with two strikes, which you should never do. So I'm not sure why you would need to practice this drill. Okay, in essence, you're getting beat by this pitch, and all you're going to try to do is foul it off. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but there's some people out there teaching this drill to kids, unfortunately. Today, we're going to see if we can do it. The emergency swing deep tee two strike drill. So I'm beat on this pitch right here. I'm just going to try it at the last second, try to swing and foul it off. So I know he's throwing that curveball. Here it comes. Oh, snap, it's a fastball. She gone.
This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Talking everything baseball.
So if you're a Red Sox fan, here's what you're thinking.
It's the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey folks, Jeff Fry here, former Major League Baseball player and your certified hitting guru. Remember now, if you like the videos I'm making, go check out SheGoneHitting.com. Get you a cool SheGone Hitting t-shirt to wear to one of the showcases where the Robin parents blind. But I got in late last night. I had a long trip from the future. And in the future, what I saw of Major League Baseball and amateur baseball was scary. I ran into a gentleman in a ballpark and said, why aren't there any fans here? He goes, baseball is ruined. I said, what happened? He said, well, they started listening to people who never played the game. They relied everything on data and stats. Guys were wearing wires on their bodies, microphones. It was terrible. And I said, well, what do you want me to do? He said, fix this game. The game that we love is gone. When you get back to present day 2020, tell people to stop listening to people who never played. Tell people to stop going to hitting instructors who never played, who are teaching gimmicks, and get back to the basics. I watched a few innings of this game, and I saw every hitter hitting like this, trying to hit the ball as high as they possibly could, and it was heartbreaking. And I think that's what's happening to our game. And I'm going to try and fix it, one way or another. This is not the swing you want. You don't want to snap it and drop it in the slot and create launch angle or launch quickness or whatever they're teaching. So this is not what you want to do, kids. Do the opposite of this. Qigong!
So look, if you haven't seen these videos, I'm telling you, you got to go find them on Twitter. Jeff Fry, and I'm not even sure what his handle is. If you search Jeff Fry on Twitter, you'll find it. It might be Jeff Fry 03. That was the number you wore with the Red Sox, number 3. And Murray, I don't mean to like do old bastard talk with you. I covered the team for about 15 years. Fry was one of my favorite guys. Okay, I got along with him very well. I think he got along with me. I mean, he's got to speak for that part of it. We're going to bring him in now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Jeff Fry, She Gone Hitting. So let me just ask you quickly. Is this like a hitting clinic now? Are you teaching kids how to hit and play? Is that the deal?
I'm teaching them how not to hit, buddy.
All right.
You are absolutely one of my favorites. I promise you, you are one of my favorites. You and Peter and Johnny, and you guys treated me well. I appreciate it.
Okay, so Jeff, here's my question to you, point blank. Okay, how do you feel about the way the game is played today?
Well, I think you know the answer to that. I think it's terrible. I watched like two innings of an exhibition game last night, and I had to turn it off. I saw guys just swinging for the fences with two strikes, and man, it's tough. As someone who grew up, loving baseball as a kid their whole life and getting, lucky enough to play it, to see what it's turned into is breaking my heart.
Okay, so why do you think it has turned this way? I mean, and again, I don't know if you have any particular theories. And just so people know that, you and I have not had this conversation. I saw you on Twitter, and honestly, Mark Bertrand, who works at the station, pointed out the videos to me on Twitter. This was a while back, and I started following them. We reconnected. But I haven't had this conversation with you. And so I'm curious as to why you think now the game has gone in the direction it's gone.
I think it's the people who are calling the shots. I think it's the people in the front offices. And, a lot of these people they're hiring to work in their player development didn't play. They're looking at numbers and data and readings. And I think it's just killing the game because the game is should not be played that way. And I mean, I don't know, Tony. I mean, you're seeing what I'm seeing, buddy.
It's
not pretty.
No, so listen, and honestly, I'm telling you, I've said this on the air, so I'm not telling you anything that I haven't said to the listeners here before. I think the game blows, Jeff. I think the quality of the game, sucks. I think it's awful. And there's no creativity. There's no athleticism. It's a softball game. Everybody goes up and they either walk, strike out, or they jack it out of the ballpark. That's it. Very few balls are put in play. The game moves more slowly than ever before. And look, I'm not trying to blow sunshine up your ass, but when you played, the game was a little bit different. And there was still, I was telling someone the story here just before the break, and I don't know if you heard it, but I remember, and I'd like you to articulate on this if you could, or expand on it, that I remember one time you stepped into the batter's box and Darren Bragg was on first base. And the count was like, I don't know, 1-0, 2-0. You stepped out and I saw you grab your wristband. And I went up to you in the on the next pitch, Bragg took off and you swung, and I think he hit a single to right field, and Bragg ended up on third. It was a hit and run play. And after the game, I went up to you and I said, "Hey, can I ask you something? Did you give Bragg a signal on that hit and run? Did you call that hit and run?" And you said to me, "I don't want you to quote me on this, and you know, don't say that I told you, but yeah, you saw it right. Kennedy gives me the right." Kevin Kennedy was the manager at the time. Kevin Kennedy gave me the right. Or told me when I feel comfortable with a guy that I could call for a hit and run. Do I have the story right?
Yes.
Okay. And secondly, does that even happen anymore? Does anybody even do that stuff anymore? Because it feels to me like there's never a hit and run, ever.
I know. It's funny. I was on Kevin Kennedy's show last week on Sirius XM Radio, and we talked about that because, you know, I actually approached Kevin and said, "Hey, well, how do you feel about me putting on my own hit and run?" I said, "You know, I hit a lot of ground balls, and it really helps me focus, man, if that runner's on the move." And so he allowed me to do it with Bragg. I did it with Braggy, Benjamin, and Darren Lewis. And, I mean, I know I had 30 hit and run hits that year, and I thought I was I'm the only one I ever knew of that was allowed to do that. I'm sure guys have, but Kevin also told me that Julio Franco did that as well when he was with the Rangers.
And Franco was another guy that to me could put the bat on the ball, Jeff, and had an ability to hit the ball the other way, right? Like, so he could create plays like that. But I look at the game on the field now and I say, that just doesn't exist anymore, let alone letting a player call it. The manager doesn't call it. Nobody calls it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's because the guys upstairs are looking at the numbers and saying it's a low percentage play. That's why we don't steal bases. Why take a risk? Why cut down on your swing with two strikes just to put the ball in play? Because putting the ball on the ground in play, percentage-wise, is, you know, you're not going to get on base. The fielders are all too good. It's all coming from upstairs. And you know, just like, you know, pulling pitchers out after they have six easy innings because the third time through the lineup, the batting average against them jumps up 100 points. Well, of course it does. They're not throwing as hard then. I mean, you know, that seems like an obvious stat to me, but I think all the, you know, Jimmy Williams, that guy knew the game. That guy had a gut feeling beyond anything I'd ever seen. And, you know, real quickly, we were in Toronto one time, and a bunch of us right-handed hitters went and played golf because there was a righty on the mound, so we knew we probably weren't going to be in the lineup. And we show up at the field. It was me and Darren Lewis and I forget who else. And we look at the lineup. Jimmy calls in his office and says, "Hey, right-handers are hitting 189 against this guy, Castillo," or whatever. So I figure, what the hell? I'm putting in all righties tonight. You guys are all in there. And we go out and we got 12 hits or 10 hits and won the freaking game. But that would never happen today. It would never happen today.
Well, look, again, the game's micromanaged, Jeff. And it's taken the player out of the game. I think it's really become more about the executives and the managers and, you know, following the numbers as opposed to letting the players play. And, you know, now look, I tell you, a lot of the analytics work, at least during the regular season, but I would also tell you that the game's less enjoyable to watch. And I can't remember a time where baseball has been less enjoyable to watch in terms of action on the field. The other thing I want to ask you is, well, a couple things. First of all, because I want to get to what they're teaching younger people in terms of how to play the game, and it feels to me like you're involved in that part of it. But before I get to that, are there ways that you would fix the game? Like, how would you fix the sport right now if they said, "Jeff, we want to use your ideas. We want to fix the game on the field"? How would you do it? What are the first things you would do?
I'd bring back the real baseball men in the game that have been pushed out of the game. In the front offices, and you know, the guys that have a lifetime of knowledge that you can't learn looking at your computer program. I'd bring those guys back in the game and get rid of a lot of these data analysts that are, you know, just crunching numbers. And I would start relying more on old school scouting. It's worked for 140 years. Now all of a sudden doesn't work. Now scouts are 20-year-old kids are going to ball games and video and high school and college kids with their phone held up showing the radar gun, and they send it into the office and they tell the scouts who to go look at. Those are two of the first things I would do. And I'd get rid of a lot of the video stuff in the stadiums, because we saw what happened with the Astros. I mean, when I came up, the phrase was, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Okay. Well, we give these guys all this stuff to use, and we saw what happened with the Astros, one of the biggest scars on our games ever seen. So I would remove a lot of that stuff and try and just back it up. I would get a new commissioner, Tony. I don't think the commissioner is doing a good job. If the game's in such great shape, why are we having to change the rules of the game to make it watchable?
Well, so look, to me, the rules have to be changed soon. Because when I say change, how do you feel about the shift, Jeff?
Oh, I mean, honestly, when I heard they were going to outlaw the shift, I started laughing. Because now we're going to reward guys that are too stubborn to make an adjustment. And say, well, listen, these guys can't hit above 230 because every ball they hit is, you know, they pull to the right side. Well, that's their fault. They don't have to make adjustments, so they're not going to do it. So why should we change the rules to help them? I don't think we should change the rule on the shift. I mean, if they want to put eight guys on the right of second base, and if you're too stubborn to hit it the other way, then go, you know, take your three hacks and go back to the dugout.
Okay, so Jeff, let me tell you why I think it should be outlawed. Okay, because precisely for the reason you're saying, the hitters aren't going to change, especially now because you have the guys in the front office that are going to say to the hitters, hey, look, we would rather you try to hit the ball with power, which means pulling it, and hitting the ball out of the ballpark or for extra bases. We'll take the ground out if there were three guys on the right side or the left side. Mostly it's against lefties, but they do it against righties now too. So because of that, guys just keep hitting into ground outs, and it affects the action in the game. So the point is, because the hitters are stubborn and they're too dumb to make the adjustment, I think you have to legislate it out and save the game from itself. Okay, that I've sort of reached that point. But again, we can agree to disagree on that part of it. I just think the hitters aren't going to change. So you know what? You gotta prohibit the shift. Otherwise, the game is going to continue to suck, and there's just not as much action in it. The other, and I'm running out of time, so forgive me, but I want to get to one other thing. As it pertains to young people, would you ever teach a kid to hit with launch angle?
Absolutely not.
Okay, and why not?
All kids are different. I mean, they're teaching a cookie cutter swing where everybody swings the same way. And if I would have tried to hit that way, or Darren Lewis or Mike Benjamin, we would have never played in the big leagues. I was told to not hit the ball in the air. I would get yelled at in the minor leagues when I hit the ball in the air. And I think it's awful for kids because they're all getting these uppercut swings, and it might work on these, you know, in Little League or whatever, 12U ball, when the ball's basically coming down anyway because of lack of velocity. But when you get guys throwing 95 belt high and you can't hit it because you got an uppercut swing, you're going to quit the game.
So, Jeff, look, I couldn't agree with you more. And I wanted to ask you that part of it because my kids played youth baseball. They still do. You know, they're in their teens now. One's 15, one's 13. And a while back, and, you know, they've had a bunch of different coaches, and one coach in particular, without getting into too many, you know, again, it's fine. I agree to disagree. A lot of people think it works. But for someone who's the size of my kids, and my kids aren't big, and you weren't a big ball player, again, you were a middle infielder. So I'm looking at it here. You had 16 home runs in your career, but you had a ton of doubles. And so the idea that someone would teach you to hit for home runs, to me, is asinine. Like, that to me makes no sense, and most kids don't belt the ball all over the place. They want to play the game and be involved in the game, and to teach kids to hit that way, to me, is one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. I hit it in the big leagues, let alone with the kids, and so that's why I asked you that question. I just think I was going to ask you, would you have ever hit that way, but you already answered the question.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Tony, is I talked to a scout buddy of mine the other day, and he went to his team's complex, and he said they actually have X's, big orange X's on the top of the cage, saying that's a certain degree of launch angle there, that's a certain degree there. We want our guys to hit the ball, aim to hit the balls up there. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm telling you, I think the game's in rough shape. I think the quality of the product, Jeff's, as bad as it has been in a long, long time. But unfortunately, we are limited to time. As you know, I always enjoyed catching up with you and talking to you. So listen, thank you for taking the time.
Okay, I appreciate it, Tony. And you're always one of my favorites, man.
Appreciate it. Likewise. All right. Again, Jeff Fry joining us via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. We'll get back to your calls. I want to touch on this Silverman story in the Globe. The Red Sox picked up a new pitcher today. And also there was something that happened in one of the exhibition games last night that really caught my attention. We'll do that here in the last 30 minutes or so of the program. But here's Murray with your headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Now, more hot takes on a short season. It's the Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Matt Barnes.
You again?
Colton Brewer.
Who?
Ryan Brazier.
Brazzy.
And those other guys.
It's back for 2019 in all-new Wheel of Gutless Bums.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora is faced with a tough decision. Who to use in a high-leverage situation late in the game? Now, let's spin the wheel.
Barnes. Brazier.
Brewer.
Thornburg.
Brazier.
Barnes.
Embry.
Work.
Brazier.
Thornburg.
Velasquez.
Embry.
Johnson.
And today's Gutless Bum is...
We played that for you last night. I wanted to play it again because we have a new name. We have a new name for the Wheel of Gutless Bums. And you're not going to know it, which is sort of the beauty of it. So the Red Sox today made a roster move and acquired Dylan Covey. Dylan Covey. It's a right-handed pitcher who has been with the White Sox the last 3 years. And again, Jim Murray is back at our studio in Dorchester. I'm working from home. So I just want to ask Murray quickly, because I heard him mention this earlier. Murray, was Covey a pickup, or did they trade for him? How did they get this guy?
You're telling me. I have no idea. I didn't have an update. I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
Okay. Sorry. I thought you had it in the headlines.
No.
Maybe I read it online. So I'm trying to find out how the Red Sox got Dylan Covey. What I do know is this, and I saw this part in Sean McAdams' account, Twitter account.
They acquired him from the Rays, so it could be just a cash transaction.
Okay, so it was a transaction. It wasn't just a, you know, he was a street free agent or something of the like. They get him from the Rays. Dylan Covey, he had been with the White Sox, went to Tampa. And let me just read you Dylan Covey's career numbers. Tell me this is not a commentary on the Red Sox pitching staff. Dylan Covey is, first of all, he was born in 1991, so he will be 29 years old in August. He'll be 29 years old next month. Dylan Covey has been in the big leagues the last 3 years with the Chicago White Sox. 2017, 2018, 2019, he has pitched in 63 games, 45 of them as a starter. His career ERA is 6.54. His best season was 5.18. His career record, listen to this, 6-29. 6-29 with a 6.54 ERA. He has pitched 250 innings and allowed 287 hits, 45 home runs in 45 starts, and he's averaged 4.1 walks per nine innings, which sucks. Okay, so the reason I'm telling you all this, 6.54 ERA sucks. 6-29 one loss record sucks. 287 hits and 250 innings, that sucks. His walks per nine innings, 4.1, which is high, that sucks. His strikeout to watch is 1.5. That sucks. He doesn't even strike a lot of guys out. So my point is this. To make room for what's his name again? Dylan Covey? To make room for Dylan Covey on the active roster, the Red Sox cut loose Bobby Pointer. What does that say for Bobby Pointer? If Dylan Covey is going to end up on the roster with those numbers, what does that say for Bobby Pointer? Wow, that is scary. So look, we'll take your calls here for the last little bit. Again, 617-779-0985. Just a couple of quick notes. First of all, there is a baseball game on TV tonight, a Red Sox baseball game on television. They're playing a couple of exhibitions here against the Toronto Blue Jays today and tomorrow. You can catch that game at 7:30, I believe it is, on NESN. So the Red Sox will play tonight. There's an actual baseball game involving the Red Sox that you can watch on television tonight. I know I'm going to tune in for at least part of that. Obviously, it's an exhibition, but I tell you in that the event you do have interest in the team still, and you should, the 60-game schedule is a great equalizer. This is a good night to check in and get your sort of first assessment of the team post-COVID. Obviously, there were some spring training games on early in the year. I was actually down there for a couple of days early in the year and saw them play. You know, it was a totally different operation then, and shortly thereafter is when COVID-19 took over the country. So there's a game to watch tonight, and there'll be another one tomorrow. The Red Sox will play on Friday, and there's an actual regular season big league game on Thursday night. Now, as it pertains to the Red Sox chances this season, and I can't emphasize this enough, I began the show with it tonight. That 60-game schedule is a great equalizer. If you think the Red Sox don't have a chance this year, you're wrong. You are wrong. The headline on Alex Spears' story in the Globe: in a compressed baseball season, every little thing becomes magnified. One game now has the value of essentially three during your customary season, meaning that every time the Red Sox take the field, it's a three-game series. That's really the way you've got to think about it. In a couple of their recent last place years, 2012 and 2015, the Red Sox had 60-game stretches in which they went 35 and 25. It is entirely possible for a team to play well, even a bad team, over a 60-game stretch. Now, there are a lot of inequities in this baseball season because it's not a universal schedule. Teams are playing within their division, and they're playing the corresponding division in the other league. So the Red Sox will play the National League East, which has some good teams in it, some bad ones too. But obviously, the reigning World Series champion Washington Nationals are from the National League East. You know, the Phillies are expected to be better. The Mets won 86 games last year. The Braves are decent. The Marlins blow. The Red Sox should beat up on the Marlins. So the good news is you have the Marlins and the Orioles in there. And again, in a 60-game season, you can beat the good teams too. So we'll see how that shakes out. With regard to some other bigger picture issues in baseball, and there have been exhibitions going on in some other markets here over the last couple of days. We played some highlights for you of the Yankees and Mets from over the weekend. There was also a game last night out on the West Coast, out in Oakland, in the Bay Area between the Giants and the A's. And these are the kinds of exhibitions you're seeing now, obviously, are teams that are in the same area, the Yankees, Mets, the A's, the Giants. You get the idea. And that game drew a great deal of attention last night, because during the national anthem, Gabe Kapler took a knee with his players. Now, Kapler, in the event you lost track of this, is now the manager of the Giants. Had been with the Phillies. Bruce Bochy retired as manager of the Giants. And Gabe Kapler was hired. He addressed the team before the game. He told them what his intentions were. He took a knee during the anthem, and in the process became, to the best of anyone's knowledge, the first coach, head coach, or manager to take a knee in protest of police brutality during the Black Lives Matter movement. And Kapler was asked about it after the game last night. Here's what he said.
I did that because I wanted them to know that I wasn't pleased with the way our country has handled police brutality. And I told them that I wanted to amplify their voices, and I wanted to amplify the voice of the black community and marginalized communities as well.
Okay, now look, Kapler's answer went on. And when he says them, by the way, when he says I told them, he's talking about his players. And he told players and his staff on Monday what his intentions were. And he said he would support whatever decision each player on the team made. Okay. And then Kapler went on to say, I told them I wanted to use my platform to demonstrate my dissatisfaction with the way we've handled racism in our country. I wanted to demonstrate my dissatisfaction with our clear, systematic racism in our country. That's what he said. Murray, did you see this? Do you have any particular thought or opinion on it?
No, it's just, you know, same thing when it was Kaepernick. You want to kneel, go nuts. I mean, I wouldn't. I haven't. And for those that, like, it makes mad, like, get used to it. You're going to see more of it. So,
okay, what I would tell you just quickly is the fact that it was Gabe Kapler, and again, and I'm reading from a story, I think this was published out in San Francisco, but according to this story, Kapler was the first head coach or manager to take a knee during the anthem in protest with his players. The fact that it was Gabe Kapler does not surprise me in the least. And when I say that, I say it as a compliment. For those of you who know Kapler from his time with the Red Sox, let me tell you that Kapler was always a different kind of guy. And when I say a different kind of guy, again, I mean that in a good way. Far brighter, far more thoughtful than your typical athlete. I would say than your typical human being. Honestly, that's not fair to athletes. Far more thoughtful than your typical human being. At one point, Gabe Kapler decided in his career, he decided that he was going to go play in Japan because he wanted to experience what it was like playing in Japan. He could have stayed in the big leagues and he went over there. He wanted to try it out and he wanted to do something different. And I mean this part sincerely, Gabe Kapler to me, way too smart to be working in Major League Baseball, way too good a human being. So to me, I thought what he did last night was tremendous. And for someone in a position of management to take that stance, particularly someone who's white, to me spoke volumes. So I know that, for example, Kyle Korver in the NBA is wearing a social justice slogan on his uniform. I know that meant a great deal to some of the players in the league. And to me, speaks a lot about Korver, just as I think this speaks a lot about Gabe Kapler. So anyway, I just wanted to share that because I thought it was a good moment last night for Kapler out on the West Coast.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.